Welcome to the CEN Show, the platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Maskani, and our panel this evening is Professor Amin Ra, Sister Linda Shorter, Brother Mashinda, Brother DX, and our guest is Tez Jones, one of our new team members. She was on about 2 to 3 weeks ago, and she's back. She's filling in for another guest that couldn't make it. And the topic this evening is lifelines. As you know from the last show, if you were here, she's an author and she has a book out, The Crackhead Poet, a real good book. So she's going to talk about lifelines this evening, and then we'll get to the panel and start talking. Welcome back, Tez. How are you? And
I'm
this is
great.
your
Thank you.
presentation.
Okay, good to be back, folks. Tonight's discussion is going to be on lifelines. Now, lifelines, the practical term of a lifeline is used to keep contact with a person, such as a diver or an astronaut, especially in a dangerous or potentially dangerous situation. Another definition of a lifeline is something which provides help or support that is needed for success or survival. Yet a third definition is a lifeline can be horizontal, it can be vertical, it can be temporary or permanent, it can be rigid or flexible. The use being a guarantee of both success and safety. Now, as we talk about the practical definition of lifelines, I, at one point in time, I became just very preoccupied with the concept of a lifeline. Lifelines are actually the paths we walk, like each individual person. That's a graphic I came up with years ago about it was very personal when as I thought about my own life's path. I started off, then I veered off, and then I veered off from that veer off, and then I round back, and then I went off it. I found myself just meandering through my lifeline of my life itself. So from that came some ponderings of, am I just doing, what am I doing with life? Like, am I participating in my own life's path intentionally? Because sometimes at some point, a lot of us have found ourselves just meandering. We're being blown this way with this wind, blow that way with another wind, and we don't even understand that we don't have to just watch life happen to us. We can have intentionality in the way that we proceed in our lifeline of living. So, are we being intentional or are we just being tossed along? Are we actively participating in our lives? Are we plotting our own route? Are we preparing for the next mile? And do we have an expected end? And for me, the way that I got some intentionality into my own life was I found scripture. So before, you couldn't pay me to read the Bible because it was just a old book of old stories for old people who were long dead and gone, and it had no value to my life, what I'm going through today. I was told that the white man wrote the Bible and it don't have nothing to do with me. But then later on, I found out that the white man ain't that wise, ain't that smart, ain't that powerful to take God out of his own word. So I was giving the white man, quote unquote, too much credit. So within the pages of the Bible, which gave me a foundation, because other than that, I was just being a victim of every circumstance. But I found out that a man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. So for me, I don't try to persuade anybody off of what they believe, but I'm just saying that scripture gave me a solid foundation. That was the only thing that got through to me. I didn't want to hear what a drug counselor said because I had just as much chance of convincing a drug counselor to join me smoking crack than they had to stop me because they were only going to tell me what I already knew. It's bad for my health. It's illegal. It's dangerous. I could lose my children. I could lose my life. So I did not go to a drug center. God met me one day when I was sitting there smoking my brains out. And he immediately snatched the taste of crack cocaine from my body. So I sat there with a pill bottle full of rocks, and I couldn't stand the sight of it, the smell of it. I didn't want to hit another rock, and I never did. And that was in 1987. So now I go around giving my testimony just so that others don't have to meander along life. People like I was in that situation. They can have a foundation, and the one that helped me is the one I recommend. So, with our community especially, we need all hands on deck. We need anybody who's got any good thing to put in to help our folks from being marginalized, disenfranchised, just being at the mercy of everybody else, every other society. I think we need to do what we need to do to help each other. So, along with that vein of thought, personally, I began to share it. So, I do go to prisons, jails, I go anywhere that I'm invited to go to speak and to help someone to get a plain path with their lifeline. Don't just meander through life at anybody's whim. Because if you don't have a plan for your life, trust and believe somebody else somewhere does have one. So I think we need to be very intentional, and our lifelines need to be connected to other people's lifelines. And that's where we're most effective. We shouldn't live a selfish existence. We should reach out, make ourselves available. It's not all about me, 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 me. It's about reaching out because we are blessed with so much wisdom, knowledge, understanding. We have so many gifts and talents that we are blessed to be a blessing. It's not just for us to be self-serving, self-absorbed. We are blessed so that we can pour into the lives of others. So to that end, I believe that our lives, our lifelines should be lived very intentionally.
That's excellent. I'm gonna go to Sister Linda.
Thank you.
Sister Linda, questions, comments?
Yes, I'm here. I was just, I mean, because I like what she said, and that was, I like that. But the one thing I wanted to say, because you was asking, you were saying it about the prisons. Now, my thing is just when you go into the prisons and talk about the lifelines, are you talking to men in prison or women in prison, or even, and then you
Both.
mentioned about, but one other thing you talked about, which you had children, so are you doing the children also in juvenile, in juvies?
Yes, we visit the children's facilities as well because they, if you catch individuals young, then it's better to, an ounce of prevention is better than just a pound of cure. Because when you have hardened adults, people can listen, but by the time someone is several decades into living, they've already developed their own habits and their own ways of thinking. And it's just harder to get through to someone who's seasoned in life and hardened by life, jaded by life, than it is to someone who's young and impressionable in the wrong way. It's easier to show them where that way they're going is wrong and what it's going to lead to, rather than to try to unscramble eggs.
Okay. Anything else, Linda?
I'm not at this time. I'm just, because you called me when I was just thinking, but not at this time though.
Okay, I can come back. Okay, Brother Mashinda. There he is. Brother Mashinda, he may be having an issue there. Okay, I'm gonna go to Brother DX.
Yes, peace and love, peace and love. Wow. So, T, thank you so much for the book, and
You're
I'm
welcome.
enjoying it so much. You know, you really are an inspiration in what you're doing, just to be able to tell your story. And it's interesting, this concept of lifelines, because there's a part in the book, and maybe you can kind of expound on what you were feeling at that time, but like, I kind of feel like what you was mentioning before about, you know, we all holding a certain amount of wisdom, knowledge, and being able to share that with the people. You know what I'm saying? Just to bring about a certain change in the individual, even, you know, you never know where a person's salvations can come from. Like yours didn't come from counseling, but at the same time, you know, you found salvation in the Bible, in the Word, you know, and for somebody else, like you had a passage in the book where this bum, I guess, or just like a scraggy looking dude got on the bus, and you were sitting there, and one time you get your seat, and it's like the challenge of the negativity, you know what I'm saying, the fight or flight kind of energy, like you had the knife, you know what I'm saying. And you could have used the knife, but instead, you know, when he put his head on his shoulder, like, wait a minute, he's like, you know, you jam a cookie, get off me. But instead, it was like the compassion part came out. You know what I'm saying? Where you seen where he wasn't a threat, but more so interested, like. And whatever he read, I was gonna ask you, like, what poem was that? Like, that changed his life, where he walked up out of there with his head up, you know what I'm saying? It was like that in itself was the word, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, he was the spirit, and it doesn't matter sometimes where that word comes from, long as the individual person is able to receive it. I think we all are Bibles walking right now, you know what I'm
Right.
saying? Your poetry was an inspiration. So I was just like, what poem was that, and what were you feeling? And maybe you could elaborate on that day.
Well, as I described in that story, I saw when he was standing at the curb getting ready to get up on the bus, he was just like he hadn't taken a bath or combed his hair in forever. So he was expecting to be rejected. And as I watched him come down the aisle, there was only that one seat next to me. And everybody was looking at me like, oh dear God, the poor girl. And I'm thinking, oh my God, because he was cussing everybody left to right as he was coming towards the back of the bus to that one empty seat next to me. Now, every morning before I got dressed and left my house, I got my knife, I put the blade, wrapped some toilet paper around the blade, put it in my bra because I wasn't fully dressed for the day unless I had my weapon, because I always lived a hypervigilance as a young woman. I lived hypervigilant and expected anything to happen at any moment because that was from the early trauma. I had to always be ready to protect myself. So when he was coming to the back, I put my book bag in my lap off that seat. And then when he sat there, I was thinking, well, if he cuss me, I'm gonna stab the so and so out of him. I'm not gonna argue. I never argue with folks. I just was gonna do what I needed to do to make him leave me alone. But thank God, as I just tried to ignore him and had my tablet out writing. So he leaned over against my shoulder as you read. I for some reason, I thought, well, he's trying to annoy me because I don't want his stinky self touching my shoulder. He's leaning over, trying to act like he's reading. Maybe he's trying to annoy me. I don't know. But the Lord gave me the grace to not be annoyed, just put the tablet over in front of him so we could share the page. I don't even know if the man could read or if he was just pretending to read, but that just softened the moment. That act of kindness is like the scripture says, a soft answer turns away wrath. So before I even knew that scripture, I guess I was just inspired to act it out, act that action out, and not get combative with him. Just put it over so he could share the page. Then I flipped through a couple more, and he was nodding his head like, oh, you're pretty good. So I took the unspoken comment, and things turned out beautifully as opposed to what I expected to happen in the initial scene of him coming towards me. I'm thinking, okay, let's get to it. I'm getting ready to get my knife out and go to work because I know this man. He just cussed the whole from the driver to all the way to the back. He done been cussing folks left and right. Ain't nowhere for him to sit but by me. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, here we go. It wasn't gonna be the first time I had to go to battle to that extent. So I was ready. But I just thank God that that changed and he went out. Now, when he came in, he was coming in as someone expecting to have people recoil from him. But when he left out, he walked quietly with his hell head high as if he had on an Armani suit. You know, he walked out with dignity in his demeanor. And I'm so glad that that was one of the things that made me think about our lives, you know, the paths we walk, when they intersect with other people's paths, we should leave people better than we found them. You know, so we should we're blessed to be a blessing. So that kindness, I had both in me. I mean, I had hell in me, but then I had enough grace because I sat still and allowed that to come up and to spill out into you know, my interaction with him. And so all was well that ended well. He went on about his way. And I believe that moment changed the both of us. I began to, you know, just think differently about the people I encountered. We don't have to recoil from folks just because they don't look washed and well fed. It made me more conscious of everything doesn't have to be a knockdown, drag out battle.
Yep, that was
Yeah, thank you.
an interesting story when I read it. I'm like, wow.
So is that poem in the book, the one that the guy read, or do you remember what it was?
Yes.
What y'all
Well, no, I don't. I have no clue what it was,
read?
you know, because I wasn't marking the time and paying attention to though. I was only paying attention to what I was going to have to do against him. I wasn't thinking about. I don't remember what we were looking at. But the poem here, The Cries, came from that incident inspired that poem. That's why they're like some of the poems in the book are sister pieces. Some poems have the backstories. So that's how that poem came about.
All right. All right. That was excellent. I read that. Now, Professor Ra.
Yeah. Well, again, I finally got in Asante Sana, Sister Tiz, for being on. And as we say in Kaweida, appreciating what you said, if I understand correctly. I agree with DX. I appreciated his comments and next question. I need to get a vision, a vision of things. This one. I need to get a vision because I'm trying to understand the structure by which I'm thinking y'all your group that goes into the prison or wherever help is needed. I assume it's not just prison. And what type of structure do y'all are y'all a lifeline? You consider yourselves a lifeline for those that need a lifeline?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Because when I was in prison, people used to come and visit us. Now, I wasn't going to see them because I wanted to know about God. I was just, it was some way to mark another day off the calendar, just to fill the time. But you never know how you're going to leave an impression on people as you're crossing paths. So some of those people that came in, I went for one reason, just to pass the time, but I got a lot of good inspiration and encouragement from something someone said. I don't even know the folks' names, but I remember what they said.
And you go to all levels of the prisons,
Yes, wherever we're invited, yeah, we
level
take.
four, three, camps, whatever. Is
Yes,
that
and
true?
one experience I do remember quite well is the women's prison, one of the women's prisons here in Florida. I went one of the days for a meeting, and the chaplain, she chose me to go with her over to the death row inmates. And there was four death row inmates, and there were four females. And she told me, I thought she was going to go with me to every cell because when we go on that wing of the prison, there's two levels, and I thought she and I were just going to go around to the different doors together. But she left me on my own. She said, I'm going to take this way, and you go over here. And she told me the four doors upstairs were the ladies on death row. So some of the doors I went to, and there's this long narrow window at the door. And some of the ladies, as I was approaching them, they waved their hand. They didn't want to hear anything I had to say, so I respectfully passed on by. But a lot of them were waiting patiently there. And when I got up to, I saved the four death row inmates for last. And when I got to their doors, you would not believe. I expected hardened looking, vicious looking criminals. But these ladies looked like they were just the sweetest things. You was like, what in the world? What did you do to be on death row? And it was one of those experiences along my life's path that really made me just think about, how situations, we think in prisons, everybody needs to just be locked away and that's that. Why waste time? But there are people that life just took a wrong turn at one moment in time and it changed their entire lives by, just one incident. It's not. My first offense sent me away. I just thought surely I was going to get probation. I'm a first time offender, squeaky clean. It's not like I took someone's life or robbed a bank. I expected to be given probation, but no, it was politics involved, and I had to go away during that t period of time and the circumstances in which I was arrested. But when I saw those ladies on death row, I could not believe it. So we think, why go to a prison? Yes, whatever they did, they deserve to be there. The court found them guilty, but you have to speak into people's lives. What was I going to say to women on death row? But one lady, she grabbed her Bible to show me. She was studying her Bible and she was into the Word, and she was asking me about one TV pastor. Did I listen to him? She said, I listen to, do you listen? We're talking through the door. And I say, yeah. I said, the Asian guy with dark hair, real cute, fine. And so we were like, to the glass, being girly, jumping around about how cute the pastor was. And just interacting, and it's like I could have gone to lunch with her the next day. So it's a fascinating calling because you do meet people that to have that human connection with under the most dire and seemingly hopeless circumstances. So it's
Okay,
rewarding.
now, so you go at that time, you were going individually, or did your group go with you?
No, we have to go as a group because
Okay.
there's safety in numbers. Sometimes
I mean, you mean,
inappropriate things have happened because
okay,
people go
now when you go as a group,
in.
do y'all get together and work out how y'all going to approach the, I mean, because you're going to talk to a group of individuals or both.
No, we talk to groups.
Okay, then. Now, so do y'all have a program that y'all follow? Who's going to say what, or what time, or
No.
you just ad lib?
No, we just everybody goes whatever is you feel impressed upon to bring the mess your message on or your inspirational, whatever you're gonna do. Because we trust each other, you're gonna be respectful and you're gonna be in keeping with what the group's mission is. So no one has to screen and approve what you're gonna say. You just go there and everyone just talks because you got different belief systems. So we have a Muslims on the team. We have people from different ages, and of course, we have myself, and there were two other females would go. So, it's just a mixed group of us because our audience is eclectic as well.
All of you speak from a spiritual standpoint, or biblical, or theological perspective, as far as offering a lifeline.
Yeah, some
Everybody's a part of the group. I mean, there's not a person talking, different than the Bible perspective or the belief system.
Like I said, we have a Muslim brother that goes, Brother Jarvis.
Well, that's spiritual.
You're right. He believe he follows the Quran, so he speaks, and whoever's there who believes as he does. But everything isn't preachy preachy. Sometimes we just go and we talk about different things. We talk about political things, like whatever's going on in the political climate. We talk about those issues because you remember the inmates are going to be on the phone and they're going to be talking to their loved ones. So they can't vote, but when it's time for us to go to the polls, they can to have discussions and their relatives who are going to vote, they can get some insight into both sides of the issues because a lot of times, especially the younger folks, they're not even looking at what's going to affect them, not just the presidency, but in their own city government. They know decisions are being made that affect them, but they're not even aware of what's going on. So we talk about certain things, not advocating for a person in particular, but the issues. And when we talk about that, that gives them something. Instead of just talking on the phone about what where your girl been, what color panties she got on, you can that conversation, but you can also have a conversation of substance when you call home. Don't just let the call be just an empty call. Talk about things that are going to help the people at the house.
So are y'all speaking from a repentive or redemption, or both, and resurrection perspective? I mean,
Well, we
you're trying to con you're not really trying to convert them to your belief, but you're
no.
trying to see the power of the Spirit
Right, because as we
to help
always
them.
say, you're going to be the Bible that people are going to read is going to be you and how you're carrying yourself. So we're going and throwing scripture at folks is I remember that didn't do anything for me, but just make me go get a drink and a joint, but and tune you out. But we go to just be have that human connection, just let people know that there's someone who does care about what's going on with them.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, like in a lot of prisons, people make wine with their fruit or potatoes. Guards smuggle drugs in for them, or some runner bring drugs in, and selling cigarettes or selling different things, bartering. You don't have no money except for canteen, so you sell, trade canteens or whatever. The point is that it's very difficult. It's not very difficult. I think your challenge and your effort is worthy, because if you reach one of them, and that's better than not reaching. At least it's an effort from a standpoint of going into the prisons or going into any community or situations, that you can get people to change their lives or get a better perspective of life to make them want to do better when they get out or when they, they. Now, do people who, how long y'all been doing this?
Rev has been doing it for like 40 years.
Okay, and so
And
you.
that's the minister who has a nonprofit, so we go in under his organization.
What's the name of that organization?
The Coach Foundation.
Coach.
Yeah, I'll send you the information.
Okay. The other thing is that one of the hardest things for a human is to take directions and seek consultation. If you give them direction, they think you're calling them stupid. And if they seek consultation, sometimes they think they're calling themselves stupid. And so they refuse it. You give a good person good advice, and sometimes they get insulted, and things of that nature. So what is challenging is that when you say that you want to make connections, that the lifeline is, if I remember, you said connect to others. How does that work?
You mean just in the going into the institutions, or what I mean in general with that?
When you was defining lifeline, you said one of the things is to be able to connect. And because he is, when people are incarcerated, they're more, it's almost a captive audience. They want to get out. They want to get out. You do the same thing. There's no clock. You have to go by the sounds. The cook's coming, or the jailer coming, or they're taking you to the yard, whatever. You take time. You don't have no watch. None of that. Unless you got TV, then maybe you can get some things, or you have a radio. It depends on if you're in prison or in a detention center, like a jail. Jail, you don't have nothing. But the point is that you when you try to get individuals to look inside themselves and change their interpersonal dynamics, and get them to you testify to your revelations. In other words, God, like you said, God took that crack out your mouth, took that. Made you not even want to look at it no more, if I'm not mistaken. And you just stop. Most people, it's hard. It's hard to stop. But but I've seen people use spirituality to stop, and I've seen people that just stop. Then I've seen people that are in 12-step programs or in Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholic Anonymous, Food Anonymous, any addiction program that they need, they're in. So when is there a follow-up, an attracting system of people that get out, that try to either, if they're in the area and want to work with you, to go back into the prisons and help? Do you get that type of follow-up?
No, there are groups that compile for like for government statistics, but that has nothing to do with us. We strictly go as a faith-based component. There are people, there people groups that go in under the educational component, but ours is just to go and whoever on the team, because we all take turns speaking. So you present yours, I present mine, and so whoever won't may not hear my message and take it to heart, or it may not impact them in any way. It'll be, you know, they'll clap for me being up there saying what I'm saying. But something, that's why we go as a team, because someone is going to receive from one of us at least. There'll be someone to speak in the language that the person can receive. So I don't expect to have all ears all the time. The audience changes because people leave, people come in. So some people are there for years. We've seen them, you know, as long as we've been going. But we don't go to like target people and talk down. We just go to share, and you become like a family member coming to visit. And it's very hard because there are rules, you know. We go through training and we're told what we can. Like, we're not supposed to embrace anybody, but you know, ladies, we're huggers. Like, you hug at church, you hug at every your meetings you go to. So we have to remember how to, you know, how to say hello, how to say goodbye, keep those guidelines adhered to. But you do get connected to people, because that's the whole point, is to make a human connection. Because nobody wants to feel like you're pointing your finger. You're standing up there and you got it all together, and you're just coming back to let them know how bad they are. So we don't ever go with that judgmental spirit. Because nobody's going to listen to anything you have to say if you're judging them. So one thing they know, I'm not there to judge them, because here is my mug shot. So when I go, they know I've been there. I've sat where you're sitting. So I'm not someone just coming in with a PhD in psychology to tell you what's wrong with your brain, what's wrong with your personality, what's wrong with your attitude, what's wrong with the way you think and speak and live. I'm not coming at anyone like that. I'm coming as just a human being who made twists and turns, made mistakes, did stuff deliberately wrong, but who saw the light and who's living her life better than she used to. And Rev used to be he used to shoot heroin. So when he's there, a senior man, and we're all walking success stories. As far as he did prison time in the very institution we go back to, he did time at that very institution and wasn't out that long before he was allowed to go back in and teach. So we let people know that life can be different than what you've known. It doesn't have to, what you've always done does not have to be what you always continue to do.
That's excellent. Now, I know I'm a person that used to do some things that I shouldn't have been doing, alcohol and a few other things that I shouldn't have been doing, and I was able to reform. So it's very important that we realize some things as we're going through our walks. So I'm telling you, this is much needed, this type of education. Professor Ra, you said something profound, I think, that needs to be repeated one more time. And maybe it can't be repeated enough, because when I'm teaching, the students are afraid to speak out. They're afraid to ask for help because of how they may feel. So can you repeat what you said when you said that when you're telling somebody something, they don't want to hear it. And then when people are So can you repeat that, please? That's very important.
It's hard. It's hard for sometimes people to follow directions, because when you give people directions, they think you call them stupid. And it's hard for them to seek consultation, because then it's like they're calling themselves stupid. And so it creates a frustration. But see, in their situation, they're revealing their life stories and talk and really dealing with it from a faith-based perspective of the power of faith. Even though Tiz quit, I think, before she even started, if I'm not mistaken, before she, she saw the revelation. See, people deeply into spirituality have revelations. They give credit to God for everything. You know, that for I mean, you know, because I could have been dead. God must didn't want me to die. I got out the house before the police raided it. God saved me. One time I was driving on the freeway, and a truck stopped in the middle lane. I'm driving, singing. You know, I'll be singing when I'm driving. And when I looked up, I was about to hit the truck, and I swerved. And I just said, "Thank God, thank God, thank God." I was young then. Thank God, thank God. Woo! Because the car behind me hit the truck, and you can see all the debris flying. And so I thank God. Then I said, "Oh man, that was just luck." I mean, that's just me, man. I as soon as I got out of it, I didn't give no credit to God. Nothing. I say, "Oh man, I just had good reflexes and luck," And so those things happen. But when you faith is a powerful tool, belief systems are a powerful tool, and it can energize you to become moral and ethical. But getting back to direction and consultation, working with people is difficult. Working with machines are easy. You can cut them off if they ain't cooperating. You understand? I'll go get a new one. But people, it's best to lose the point rather than lose the person, as we taught in Taoism. In other words, if I lose the person, I'm not going to ever make the point. So I'll concede and then come back later, because I don't want to lose the person. So I understand the challenges they were facing and their mission. Because see, most people see religion in three ways. You're either trying to convert me, you're trying to sell me something, or you're trying to use me. Convert, consumer, or utilitarian. And so that's why a lot of people, when the Jehovah's Witnesses come to their door, "Ah, I don't want that book. I don't want that stuff. That type of stuff." But man, there are people that swear that if it wasn't for God, they would not be living, or they would not be where they are. And you can't take that away from them, because that's what they experienced in their life. And that's what the book of Revelation is all about, God revealing itself, or coming back to reveal itself. I think that's next. But anyway, go ahead, Tiz. This is your show.
Oh no, it's our show.
Thank you. That's what I say. But yeah,
If I may interject just for a sec, because Ted said something in reference to what Professor Rob was talking about on the level of how how to get the inmates and different people to open up, you know what I'm saying, and talk about their lives, is like by not making it personal, but making it just a subject that anybody can open up and talk about, and not personalizing it and making it, open forum, so to speak, so that people don't feel like, they can always, speak in third person and maybe get the answer they're looking for. You know what I'm saying? Or find a way to express it and convey it in a way that, they feel comfortable enough to talk about it if it's not personalized. I think that's a very good concept. Thank you, Tess.
Thank you.
Right.
Just one
Brother.
more quick point, Roger G. The mark of a good child is how they act when they ain't around their parents or guardians. The mark of a person that is di really dealing with life changes is how they act when the change agent ain't there no more. In other words, in prison, I had a sister. And she'd be in jail. She said, bro, I'm straight. I said, yeah, in jail, you're going to be straight. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? But it's the streets when you get out, and it's a blessing that Tiz had her experience of getting out and being able to say that, hey, you can stay out. But some people, man, it's a revolving door. And she knows
Right.
what I'm talking about. They become institutionalized, man.
Yes.
Some people looked at that as they call they sell their house, and their home, especially if they're doing time. When you're doing 2 years, 3 years, that's downtime in prison.
Yeah.
You got a date, that's downtime. But when you got 20, 30 years, hey man, you gotta wait till that you get to at least 5 years before you go before the parole board sometimes, it's a challenge. And then if you leave with a tail, you're still in custody, you just out. They can come in your house anytime they want, they can violate you anytime you want. It's probation ain't a free ticket. You gotta report if it's formal probation. You get 3 years, you get out and you got 3 years parole or 2 years probation, and you got to report to the probation officer. Man, they violate people all day.
Yeah, and speaking on the revolving door syndrome, that's why we do what we do, because if you can interrupt just one life from going back, people do things, get into patterns because they have nothing to be a catalyst for change. So some people, like that's what I was saying about lifelines. Are we going about living intentionally, or are we just going with the wind? An adverse wind come from this way, and an adverse wind come from that way. So you just tossed about. So what are people thinking when they're going in and out? Why are they going in and out? We had a gentleman. He was at the time maybe in his 60s. And he had spent, I think, about 30 some, close to 40 years in and out, in for most of that time. And one night we went there, and in the meeting, he told us, he said, the light bulb came on. I think I got it now. Because you never know what you're gonna say, in whatever time you go. That the light bulb will come on for someone. So he's out now. He's been out a couple years now. And I don't think he's going to go back because the light bulb went on for him. And we see that happening. So now we know that there is a school to prison pipeline where children are being tracked. You're supposed to be a little black boys. Are being tracked from
Their performance in school.
right. So they're gonna be watched, and their course is gonna be charted to see who's more likely to become an inmate in the prison. Prison is business now. Prison is privatized. So prison now is free labor for corporations. So there's a method to the madness. So what we do is for people who these concepts are so unknown to them, people think they're just living any kind of way for any kind of reason. But no, someone, if you don't have a plan for how you're going to go down your lifeline, your life path, you don't have a plan. A whole lot of other folks got some plans for you. So we try to circumvent those bad plans that someone has for everybody. by putting our 2 cents in where we can.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Sister Making It Happen. Welcome.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And what a great show, Sister Jones. And thank you, Sister Shorter, for making sure that I got on the call today. And I'm listening. I have family members incarcerated myself, and so it always it affects you, whether you're in or out, it affects you. And so I like to just listen and hear, and always looking for support from my family and figuring out, how to stay connected to them, and so that they don't feel disconnected, and always really focused on, intentionally focused on my folks that are incarcerated, one in particular that I'm talking about. So I love what you're here saying, and I'm learning, and again, also feeling the effects of the system. So thank you.
Thank
Thank
you.
you. Okay, Tez, I have something for you to respond to.
Okay.
On page 46 in the book, second
Page 46.
paragraph,
Let's see, 46.
I'm going to read a little bit of this, and I want you to respond to it because I think it's very important. It says, there are legitimate reasons why we are maladjusted and destructive to ourselves and or others. These reasons should never be used as excuses to remain in an unbalanced and harmful state. Thankfully, there are countless resources available to anyone who wants to educate themselves and begin the process of healing and self-improvement. And I think that has a lot to do with what we're doing here, but can you expound on that?
Yes, we hear all the time when people, well, that's just the way I am. And we make up these mantras that we live by, that we just operating on autopilot in such negative ways. But there are reasons we are the way we are, but those reasons should not be excuses to remain that way. And the things I wrote about in the book, it's stuff that I had to walk through myself. I had to understand that yes, things happen. I was a helpless child. Grown folks did things and said things and mistreated me. There are reasons why I was the way I was, just so angry and full of rage. And but that's no reason to stay that way. Things happen, but I can actually choose how I go forward. I actually have a choice. So there are ways, there are a lot of resources. What helped was when we had shows like Sally Jesse Raphael and Phil Donahue, and when all the talk shows came on the scene, that's when a lot of folks started seeing, I'm not alone. This happened to me, but now the world's stuff is being brought out. And a lot of people then started to see, well, there needs to be, this stuff is being talked about openly, so we need to have some resources here to help people to deal with this stuff. It's coming up and out, but what now? So I think that was what I noticed that started to happen that helped a lot of people understand you weren't alone. This stuff happened in isolation. And a lot of people were messed up because they didn't have an outlet. I didn't have a voice. That's why the first story is entitled Be Quiet, because I always had to be quiet and be watchful. But when I wrote that on page 46, I was going back to, just I wanted to put that in there to remind people, yeah, we can know some things, we can know stuff without even it being at the forefront of our thoughts, Yeah, we know there's Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, we know there's this or that, but we need to really, really pay attention to what's going on with us. And if we need to get somewhere and get with someone to get a grip so that we can live a better life, then we need to go ahead and do that. I mean, there used to be a stigma on asking for help, but now people realize the whole world, all of us are messed up. Why are you standing next to somebody being ashamed? Their stuff is worse than yours, truth be told. So we can all dress it up and make it look cute, but we are some messed up folks underneath all the glitz and glitter. Don't let the lip gloss fool you. You're some crazy person right here sometimes. So we need to just understand. I wanted people to understand that there's help available. Maybe no one person, no one group, no one organization can solve all of your ills. You got to put in work, but you can be better tomorrow than you were yesterday and than you are today if you want to put in the work to get it done. So that's why I put that in there. So wherever the book lands, someone can see that.
Yes, it's a lot of good things in the book, and we do have to work. You have to put in the work to be okay and to remain okay. Excellent point. So I'm gonna go back to Brother Mashinda. Brother Mashinda, are you able to come on? Maybe not. Okay, Sister Linda, any last words?
Any last word? I'm
Or if
enjoying
you
this.
have a question.
I'm learning something every time I hit pass. So I don't have any questions right now. I'm just saying I like this, and I just want her to keep going on.
Definitely. Thank you.
Oh, but one quick question I have to ask her.
Okay.
Because they go into the prisons, and then I know the technology, is there any way that some of the prison the people's lives that you've touched, are they able to reach back out to you? Not the
Well,
next day.
we're not supposed to. Now they can reach the organization, but I cannot have a personal relationships. That's a no-no. We have to keep it professional, so they can't be having our home numbers and we can't be interacting with their family members. There's a protocol to being a volunteer, and you have to take the HIPAA Act is in effect. There's a dress code in effect. So we have to adhere to the rules. And so no, we cannot individually have them call. They can't call us. You will be cut off from going if you're caught. And believe it or not, there's a story of a lawyer who took his personal computer into a visiting room where he had a lawyer client privilege, and he was making porn with one of the young ladies right
Wow.
there. And now how? it's so your whole career is gone because of this vice that you have that you just let to get the best of you. So some strange stories have been told to us when we go to training class. And we have to do it every couple years. So the stories we hear, one gentleman years ago, one of the guards, he brought crack cocaine in, say he thought it was peanut brittle, and
Wow.
he put it in his lunchbox. So we are told stories in the training that is unbelievable. But these are real things that happen. So when they share those stories with us, it's just to let us know that, and it goes back to what was said earlier about the stuff that the inmates do, some of them do, but people are gonna find a way to get their needs met. They have to be clever to come up with what they need and how to get it. So it's just survival. If you're very limited behind bars, so people come up very ingenious ways to get their needs met, and they will use you if you're a volunteer. If you have this zeal for you want to help and you want to, so if they will come with a sad story. Oh, well, can you get word to my mom, or can you get word to my sister? She's got my children. And so you have to be very, very careful about being too helpful, being too compassionate, not to the point where you become a pawn in their game. But people want to get their needs met, and if they see a way they can use you to get it done, you have to realize why you're there and stick to the rules.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Brother DX.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Right, Professor Ra.
Yeah, I just want to say I compliment you for your strength, your endurance, your commitment, your ability to transform some people's lives that you touch, and to transform your own life. I know it's amazing to your family members and to them that knew you before you transformed. And to see you out publishing books and generating words for thought. Words are powerful. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And so, words are powerful. And so I just want to commend you and Linda said, just keep doing what you're doing. As long as you're satisfied and you see results,
Yes.
and you don't feel like it's hopeless.
And I will say also, everything is not serious. Sometimes we just keep it light. You know, we tell jokes, we have a good time. One of my signature things that I do when I go is I have a question and answer, because I don't like to just talk to people. We have questions. You know, no question is off limits. They can ask anything that they don't have clarity about. This is a safe place to open up and ask questions. So sometimes I'll do, like, there's a Langston Hughes essay, Salvation. Periodically I'll read that, usually around Black History Month. I'll read that, and they like the way that I inflect my voice with that. That's a very it's a funny piece, but it's very profound message in it. It's called Salvation by Langston Hughes. It's a personal essay. And so sometimes not everything is preachy, preachy, serious, serious. We do try to keep it light, because sometimes you just want to have fun. You don't want to be, heavy, weighed down conversations. So we have a variety of ways of communication and interacting.
Lowering the effective filter. That's what we call in education, when you're able to get the kids to, if you get their filter down, you more can come in. So
Yes.
keeping it light like that. So it's a good strategy.
Right.
Yeah. Sister making it happen. Any last words?
Well, thank you for the opportunity. So yes, as an educator, one of the things I do, working with a younger group these days, is really listening, and so that I can tend to their needs, their, mental health needs that they have, and I'm trying to help their parents. A lot of the parents have mental health issues, and so the younger and younger we can, help the parents with their parenting. Then it can benefit the children, but it's really important that prison to school to prison pipeline, that we are very clear and support our community to make sure that we're not on the wrong track, end up in the wrong place that we didn't intend to be. So thank you for your work and your ministry and all that you're doing, and good luck on your journey.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. Well, Tess, I'm glad that you are a part of our team now. And any last words before you go? Because I know you'll be back hopefully many, many times.
Well, I like to close with a poem, if I may.
Go ahead.
It's called Well Done. There is nothing new under the sun, but when my last work is done, I want to know within me I've been the most I could be. I don't want to look with sorrow forward to the next tomorrow, But instead, be content with the time I have spent. If my visit here did cause at least one positive pause, if there was any that indeed took of my example helpful heed, then my conception was no waste of purpose I did get to taste. And on the day that's mine to die, my birth itself will testify. A job well done, a mission complete when I'm before the judgment seat, a yielded vessel, a willing soul. My maker's countenance, I will eternally behold. Imagine that. And thank you for allowing me to share.
Excellent. Excellent. Now,
thank you.
Is that in the book?
Yes, it's well done.
Okay. Okay, good.
I don't know what page it's on.
Well, that's fine. It's in there. Now, do you have every single poem that's in this book? Do you have it memorized like that?
And most.
Okay.
Some of them are near and dear. And then that's a performance piece that I actually performed, like Pen Personified. I actually performed that with an ink pen. The Rattler is one where I actually animate, you know, choking the life out of the snake. So some of them are performance pieces. So I kind of do those regularly.
Yep, you're good at that. You could be a rapper.
I might try my hand.
Yeah. Well, excellent. I appreciate you sharing with us this evening. And Professor Rod, can you tell us what's going on next week? Because we're switching days. Conscious Corner is going to be on Wednesday. And the CEN show, and also DX. DX will be the guest on this show, the CEN show. DX is going to be the guest. DX, do you have that title for us? For next
week? The title for next week?
Yes.
If
you don't have it, that's fine. It'll be on the website. We'll get it up there.
I'm gonna text you tonight.
Okay, that's good. All right.
I'm gonna text you tonight.
Okay, so Professor Rock, can you tell us what's going on next Wednesday for the Conscious Corner?
We're gonna have Dr. Maulana Karenga, the creator of Kwanzaa, discussing the origin and history of Kwanzaa, how he created it, what the symbols mean, and what the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles, which is the foundation of Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is a non-personality. I mean, it's not about celebrating an individual or person or historical person.
Excellent. That's a world-renowned personality that's coming on, and we're glad that he's coming.
It's not about sectarian. It's not about religion. Most people celebrate Kwanzaa and Christmas. There's no conflict.
And
the 7-day celebration.
It's a cultural piece and also ideology. Is that correct?
No, it's a cultural piece with a philosophy that grew out of Kawaida, the best of African thought and practices, ongoing synthesis, with constant exchange and sensitivity with the world. In other words, you know, you change as life changes. It's about values and ethics and morals. And living that type of life, the same thing that Ted's talking about. But, you know, it's a philosophy.
Looking forward to Brother DX on Tuesday and Dr. Marlon Karenga on Wednesday.
Oh, yo, Ross, I'm trying to word it. It's the social media and the collapse of the quantum field.
Okay. Yeah, text.
Can you repeat that? What did you just say?
Social media.
And the collapse of the quantum field.
The collapse of the quantum field. Yeah, we definitely need to know what that means. So excellent, Brother DX. So
quantum field.
Yeah. So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. We will see everybody here, hopefully, on Tuesday and Wednesday next week. And if not, we'll see you soon.
All right.
Good evening. All right.